All right. Thank you, Joe. It's 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. The computer decided it was going to hiccup just a little bit here, but Mayor Bloomberg has not. He is here. Good morning, sir.
Did I promise you?
See, I knew you were going to do this. We talked about it earlier.
When the days were freezing, I said, John, I'll bring you warm weather. You just wait till tomorrow and Sunday.
And I was skeptical. No, you were right there again, Mr. Mayor.
You know, that's the mayor's job. Bring good weather.
good morning. Good morning and welcome. Here we are on another Friday, and we still have no solution to the MTA's problem.
We do not have a solution to the MTA's problem yet, but let us hope that they pull together and get one.
All right. We've been talking this morning, and in Joe's newscast, he's been covering it, of course, the latest out of the Senate proposal of the dollar cab assessment, 50% staying with the city and the MTA and 50% going upstate.
Well, I don't think, you know, it's one thing. Is it appropriate? Does it make sense to put a surcharge on taxis? The issue there is you're trying to encourage people to take buses and subways, and if not that, a taxi is clearly better than their own car because you don't have the parking problem, and sometimes it's more than one person, whatever. Having a fee on New York City taxis to build roads upstate is something the city just can't afford to do. Our economy is being strangled by high cost of transportation as well as other things. And keep in mind, when New York City makes money, we really do support upstate. They keep saying, oh, that's not the case. The politics up there are the reverse. They say, oh, New York's sucking the blood out of us. It's actually the reverse. If you just take a look, the numbers are the numbers. We send $12-odd billion more to Albany than we get back, and that gets distributed to the other 57 counties. There's 62 counties, five of which make up New York City.
Interestingly enough, this morning I asked the question and did not have the facts and figures. I said, how much money can possibly be raised by tolling the taxi cabs?
Well, there's roughly, because we have GPS now in these cabs, we can tell exactly how many trips there are. There are about 450,000 cab rides a day, average, a day, and they carry about 650,000 people.
I would never have guessed it was
that's
that high.
That's why, because you
I'm on the radio and
you're in the radio and I'm out on the streets.
I got you. Yeah. So that's a whole bunch of change.
Well, if it's 450,000 and you had a 50-cent thing, a charge, it's
$200,000
a day. You multiply it by 365,000.
Is the surcharge, the dollar surcharge, applicable to those black cabs, the black cars?
Well, it's a question. They haven't written the law yet.
Could be. But then how would you track?
I mean, they could charge $1 for every time you take a shower. Who knows? I don't know how they collect it. But the state legislature can do anything they want.
Don't
be good? Or
don't give them any
maybe
ideas.
Great. Who knows?
Don't give them any ideas.
Well, nevertheless.
All right.
The bottom line is, and you saw a big rally yesterday, the TWU, Transport Workers Union, the people that work in the MTA were rallying because the management's told them there isn't any money for big raises. Isn't any money really for supporting what they have now. That's why we have to raise the fares or find alternative sources or what's much more likely a combination. And the MTA can say that, but the TWU has the right and, in fact, has done this to go to arbitration. And in arbitration, there's an independent guy in the middle. It happens to be John Zuccotti, who's a great New Yorker and scrupulously honest and smart guy, understands the city. And then the MTA will have its person, which is really the public's person. Keep in mind, government is us. So the MTA has, or the public has its representative, and then the TWU has its, and you need two out of three to get together. And the arbitrator typically tries to get the two to agree without him or her. And if it can't, then cajoles one, says, look, if you don't do this, I'll go with the other guy, and this is the other guy. If you don't do what I want, back and forth. But any raise that the arbitrator gives is something at the moment that MTA can't afford. And the MTA, the arbitrator has certain guidelines that he or she has to work under, comparables, elsewheres, and one of the issues is can they afford it, but it's not the only thing.
talked with Malcolm Smith yesterday and asked him whether or not he has the votes for this, and he said that he was confident on Monday that he would be able to deliver the 32. He said he would like 35, but he said, I think I got 32. What are you hearing? Said the same sort of thing?
Nobody knows, John. I mean, we all sit here and we speculate. It gives us something to talk about or write about. But you don't know how every individual senator is going to vote. You don't know whether they are going to change their mind from where they are today. The tradition in Albany is you never talk to the out party. So, I mean, when they say getting votes from the other side, they didn't even tell the other side. And they didn't before, and they don't now. It is not any different between when Joe Bruno and the Republicans were in power and Malcolm Smith and Democrats were in power. They just don't consider the other side. And, I love this. Everybody says I should go out there and get a few votes. They didn't even get – I was – one of the leaders said to me when I called him and asked him, where he stood, and maybe it would be helpful if he could come to the table and provide a few votes – said, last time I was in a meeting, nobody talked to me. They didn't even say hello.
So your phone call was nice, and it was, proactive.
Well, but these things change. They're fluid, and hopefully they will come together.
If they don't, we're running out of time.
Well,
we have a month before the MTA is going to start to implement.
Well, you're not running out of time. You have a month before we start changing the fare boxes. I mean, it takes some time, so I don't know how that's done, but I think it's July 1st when the fares would go up dramatically, and then the next time the fares would go up would probably be the end of the year, and then next year is an election year for Albany, and you know the politics of that. Right now, we're not doing any of the capital things. We haven't for a long time. There's some projects that are still going on, but this is big a disaster long-term as it is short-term. Short-term, it's going to hurt people paying more. Long-term, unless we make the kind of investments we need, we're not going to have a mass transit system that helps us. The air will be dirtier than it should be. The planet will be hurt more than it should be. And our economy is going to suffer.
And as I pointed out to the majority leader in the Senate yesterday, that no matter what takes place over the course of the next week or next couple of weeks, it's only really for this year. I mean, there's really not a long-term issue being dealt with.
Long-term solution.
Yeah.
To which he said?
We'll deal with that when we get to it, basically.
Well, in all fairness to Malcolm, exactly. That's the way Albany's always worked.
Right.
And that's, it's not the way it's told. The trouble is that the problems we have, and it's true at nationwide as well, a lot of these problems are big, long-term problems. And you have to start the solution and pay for it now, and the benefits won't be evident, realized, who knows even if they come, way down the road when you're not likely to be in office. A good example is the city's water tunnel. The new tunnel, it's going to be done in a couple of years. It's very close. The drilling is finished. They're lining it with cement.
20 years or something?
It's been going on through, I think, five different mayors.
Right. Amazing stuff. You said that when you wanted to put in the GPS in the credit cards into the cabs, there was a lot of screaming and yelling by the cabbies that it was going to cost them money. You said, I don't think so. I think you're going to make a whole lot more money. Evidence shows you were right. The tips definitely have increased.
Yeah.
Do you think the dollar surcharge will negatively impact drivers and companies?
Well, it certainly makes it more expensive to take cabs, and fewer people will ride cabs, whether it's a lot fewer or a few fewer.
You will know, though, because you've got your cash register on the GPS, which
shows
exactly.
Absolutely every single ride. That's one of the advantages of having, if you're going to make, I keep saying this, whether it's true of healthcare or anything, if you're going to fix a problem, you have to have the data. And that's why people who don't want problems fixed don't want you to collect data, because they're afraid it'll be used to prove something that they don't want. Even if it's the truth, they don't want it out there.
All right, Mr. Mayor, stick close here. We've got a couple of commercials, 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. We will be right back. 21 minutes after 8 o'clock, Friday John Gambling Show means Mayor Michael Bloomberg joins me here in Studio 4. We would encourage you to join us via telephone if you've got a question for Mayor Mike before we finish up. 800-321-0710. 800-321-0710. Some stories during the week about your experiment with pulling people out of the bottom and by the bootstraps, really giving them money to do things in their lives that will improve things. You've experimented. I think you had a lot of money. Didn't you have like $100 million?
No, we raised $50 million privately.
Okay.
It's too early to tell on some things, most of it. We have 2,500 families that qualify for the money, 2,500 families that don't but are the control group, so we can see what happens to one versus another. Because if everybody does better, then spending your money didn't make any difference. It was the fact that the world changed. And it's still a little bit early to tell, another 6 months or a year. You know, the things are, did the attendance at school for the
kids. What were
the
different things? What were some of the different
areas?
Well,
you know, if you seeing a doctor for preventive care, a young mother with a baby, taking the baby early or before, making sure she gets prenatal care, making sure the kids go to school more and do better in school. Staying with a job longer. You know, there are a variety of things that you look at, and it may work or it may not. You don't know. It did work in Mexico, some other Latin American countries. I think Turkey was another country that tried it, and it seemed to work. You know, it's no panacea. It's not going to solve everything. But keep in mind, we incent wealthy people with money, and this is incenting poor people with money. The real difference with wealthy people, you do it by giving them a tax break. It's more politically easier, I guess, than sending them a check, but it's the same thing. With poor people, they don't pay taxes generally, so you can't give them a tax break. You give them cash. But, you know, it's the same thing. The government, in this case the private sector, to see whether it works, incents people to behave in a way that society thinks is overall good for society.
And so, again, you're going to give it another 6 months before any
decisions are made?
Well,
you know, we'll run out of the money eventually, and then we'll have to either raise more money or the public will take it over, you know, in the public budget. The public should only do it if it really provides results and is a good investment for the public. If not, we'll at least have learned that it doesn't make any sense. And, you know, in science, when you do something and it doesn't work, scientists would tell you that's almost as valuable as if you do something and it does work, because at least it tells you don't go down that road, look elsewhere for a solution to a particular problem.
Well, I think it's interesting that you've even attempted this, that I think the experiment is worthy in and of itself.
It's shown it worked elsewhere, so it certainly, you know, is something you should think long and hard about. If you can do it with private money, it's worth trying. And let me rephrase that. If you can raise private money, there are private donors who think it's worth trying. And we'll see.
I know you've been concerned about the homeless in shelters and people that don't have places to live in New York City. And there's a story from the Coalition for the Homeless about, what is it, federal housing vouchers that...
Well, the federal government gives us a voucher is basically a subsidy to your rent. The federal government has a program. They cut back on a lot of them. We have created a city voucher program. Doesn't go on as long. It scales down each year, so it helps you get going, but then you've got to take over yourself more. I think it's one of these things that you really should have part of a program where people just don't get addicted to it and say, well, there's no reason to go to work. I'll just take the government money. In the city voucher program, we give you a hand up rather than a handout is the way we phrase it. And then after the first year, you've got to pay more. And the second, you've got to pay more. And the city part of it goes down. The problem you have at the moment is, you know, with the economy falling apart, more people come to the shelter system. That's the bad news. The good news is, because Linda Gibbs and all her people have worked so hard, nobody sleeps on a bench anymore. We forget that 6-7 years ago,
absolutely,
people slept on benches. 6 or 7 years ago, we bus kids at 3 a.m. from one place to another. I mean, all of that stuff has been fixed, and we are handling the larger number of people. It's also true, what's interesting, is that the number of people sleeping on the street as opposed in the shelter system has declined precipitously. It's come down virtually every year since we started our census and worked on it. People who sleep on the streets are a little bit different than people who go to the shelters. Typically, we've had some contact with them. We've tried to get them into shelters, but they have either psychological problems or substance abuse problems. And when you bring them into a shelter, they leave right away. And you can't force them to do it. So they sleep on the subways or under a bridge. And the first Monday in every February, we do a census. We go out in the streets, we have volunteers, and we actually count. And you say, well, how do you know you count them all? It's interesting. We have 500, 1,000 people, I don't know how many. We dress them up as homeless. We send them out to different places around the city where we think homeless might be. And then the independent volunteers that go out, they go and look, and depending on what percentage of our decoys we find, we assume that's the percentage of what's really out there we find, and so you gross up the number. And I think
that's
it's
interesting.
Down,
I don't think I'd ever heard that.
Sure, because otherwise, how would you have, you have to have good science, John, if they don't have good numbers, right. Keep coming back to you. Yep. Can't measure anything. So,
the decoys.
Decoys help, but you in New York City, the number of people that are sleeping on the streets, you take 2,500 and you divide it into the population of 8.3, 8.4 million, it's something like 1 in 4,000 sleep on the streets. There are big cities in this country where it's 1 in 100, 1 in 200 that sleep on the streets. People don't understand just how few there really are. There are some, and we certainly continue to try. We certainly continue to try to work with them, but you know, the bottom line is, you in a downtime in turn, you're going to have more people come into the shelters, and the good news is we're ready for them, and with all of the influx, we're still able to handle it. You just don't want people sleeping in the streets if you can possibly avoid it, and you want to make sure that people that come to the shelters get accommodations. People that come to the shelters in many cases are families. Typically it's a single mom with a couple kids on average, and so it's much worse, a much bigger problem than if it's just one male all the time.
Okay.
You still see people sleeping in parks and that sort of thing.
And
on the
will.
Subways, out of the 2,500 that sleep on the streets, that includes subways.
All right. Some good news that you got some more money for charter schools from the state.
I saw that. I don't know whether I saw the announcement, whether it's actually money. Keep in mind, government works in funny ways. They say they're giving money, and sometimes it doesn't show. I hope this does. Charter schools are public schools. And they just, some people don't like them because they provide competition for the more traditionally run public schools. But competition is the best thing. That's what keeps our good schools even getting better.
I saw that there was some idea to take some of the closed Catholic schools and turn them into charter schools.
Working on that. See, here's the issue. Some of the small Catholic schools, and it's not just Catholic schools, there are
other parochial schools, other churches, other denominations,
and they can't afford them anymore. The people that go there can't pay, and the sponsoring church organization doesn't have enough money to keep them going. If they were to close, those kids would go into the public school system, so we're going to have to pay for them. Better to have the schools themselves be converted into charter schools. They aren't full, so it would give us more capacity than other buildings that presumably are in good shape, we hope, and we'd only deal with those that are, so that we'd pick up more seats, and the expenses, yes, it's more expense, but we're going to have that anyways.
This, I think, would be the most controversial aspect of that. Would program still focus on the religious aspect,
That's one of the problems. You'd have to take it out of the school completely. But from the church's point of view, if they're going to lose the school anyways, better that the kids get a good education, and then they can provide whatever religious instruction they want to provide and the parents want the kids to have elsewhere. That's, in fact, what happens today. If you go to a traditional public school, and you can still get religious training at whatever your religion happens to be, but just different place.
Absolutely. So now I've the voucher issue, which we're not talking about here, but I always thought, you know, people say, I want to send my kids to the private schools, to the parochial schools. Well, many
the parochial schools are the private schools for minorities. That's what it is today.
Correct. Well, but also most of them are full or near capacity, and they don't have a lot of room. So I don't know how that voucher system would make a difference.
Unfortunately, the trouble is the parochial schools aren't at capacity anymore. People can't afford it, even if it's only $2,500 compared to a really private school that may be in the tens of thousands of dollars. $2,500 is still a lot of money to a lot of people.
I talked with the new archbishop about this, and he says it's one of his top priorities.
His predecessor, Cardinal Egan, for the Manhattan Diocese, for the New York Diocese, did not want to do this. Bishop DiMaggio, who runs the Brooklyn Diocese, does want to do it, and that's who we're working with. But we've talked, I gather, to the archbishop for the New York Diocese about doing the same thing.
All right.
It's interesting.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we've reached the half hour, 8:32 precisely. Let us get to our latest news right now. Once again, Joe Bartlett. 21 minutes now before 9 o'clock in the morning.
Shining star, I guess you and I are too old for it?
Well, I think unless you're not still in 12th grade.
I think so. It sounds like a good program.
I tell you, it's awesome, and you can't believe the talent that
you know, when we have our events at Gracie Mansion, we used to get Broadway stars to come and volunteer their time and sing a few songs, entertainment for the group that was there. And now we use high school students from Frank Sinatra.
Precisely.
And, you know, LaGuardia, places like that.
Stunning, isn't it?
Last night we had a group at Gracie Mansion, and we had a nice young girl, 10th grade, I think LaGuardia High School, but high school pianist, and I said to her, would you like to play at Carnegie Hall? She says, we already have.
So there, Mr. Mayor.
Right.
To you.
You know, the old... you ask somebody in the street, how do I get to Carnegie Hall? And the answer is?
You get take a bus or a cab.
Practice.
Okay. There was a statistic in the paper this morning from one of our politicians here in New York City that said that 25% of the population pay half of their income in rent. Do you think those are legitimate numbers?
It might very well be. I just don't know. The financial planners have different views as to what percentage you should pay, and I don't know what should means. The smaller percentage of your income you pay for rent, the better. Sure, I mean that's true for everything that you buy.
I'm not sure what the point of that was.
I don't know what the point of it is either. It is true that it's hard to make ends meet when the economy slows down in this city because lots of people want to come here and people aren't leaving. You know, you improve the schools, you bring down crime, more people want to be here. That puts more pressure on the housing supply, which is why we want to do two things. One, the city has to continue its affordable housing program. We're building or rehabbing affordable housing for more people than live in Atlanta, Georgia, 500,000 people. You also want to make sure that this is a very attractive place for developers to come and invest private money and build housing because the government could never build enough housing. When people lose their jobs, they can't pay their rent. When people make less money and if they have a small business, they have a tougher time paying the mortgage or the rent. It's tough times. And what we're trying to do in the city is if people get in trouble, lose their jobs, can't make a mortgage payment, don't have insurance, call 311. We have counselors that for free can tell you, you know, what you can do about it. Don't just sit there. You're not on your own. Can the city solve all your problems? We can't go pay your rent. We can't go pay your mortgage payment. We can't hire everybody. We can't pay for everybody's health care, although if you come to any public hospital, we will. The more people that want to live here, the more pressure there's going to be on our housing supply, and therefore, the advocates will scream, people can't afford to live here. But instead of complaining, we got to do something about it, and that's our affordable housing plan. That's our city voucher program we talked about earlier. That's making sure that this is a city where developers feel comfortable that they'll be able to get good investments and the government won't step on them too much. And, you know, landlords, I don't like my landlord. But we need people to come here and invest and build. And if we don't, we'll never be able to have enough housing.
Speaking of building things, is Coney Island nailed down?
nothing is nailed down on Coney Island. I think
except what, the boards.
Except
the boards
and some of the boards aren't. And, you know, the boards, we have the problem because they're made of hardwood, and the hardwood is an environmental issue. We've made our last best offer, I think, is fair to say. It's gone on for too long. Keep in mind, if Coney Island development goes ahead, we will have to put $1 billion or some number like that in sewers and water lines and infrastructure kind of things. So this is nothing free. There's just a limited amount the city can pay for land that we want to make sure we have amusements on. I was out there week before last, maybe. I had a hot dog at Nathan's. Not good for my waistline, but they're
tasty.
Very good hot dogs. Now, I'd never going to be in the Nathan's hot dog eating contest. That's strange. But when I go by, I always love to take a Nathan's hot dog, put some mustard on it, and chew it slowly. It really is good. Anyways, it would be sad if we lost the amusements, and I don't know that the market is there for anybody to do much else in terms of private development, but we'll see. There is one private developer. We've been working with him, it's time to fish or cut bait, as they say. Do you say that?
Not often, but once in a while, if it's appropriate, fish or cut bait. Exactly. Yeah. So what's the weekly assessment of the economy this week? The MTA, it was determined, deficit is maybe probably bigger than had been.
Well, what's happening to the MTA is the number of real estate transactions has gone way, way down, and they get a part of the real estate transaction tax, so that revenue source has been cut dramatically for them, and fewer people are taking the subways and buses.
I saw that.
Well, some people think it's because there are fewer jobs. I don't know whether that's true. My guess, and it's just a guess, unless you went out there, I guess, and started surveying people who weren't getting on the subway and buses. I don't know how you get to them. I think there's some of it is, not all, but some of it's that, but some of it's also people in tough times say, well, you know, we're not going to go into the city for dinner, into the city meaning Manhattan, or if you live in Nassau.
It's a comparatively small number. I think I saw approximately 20,000
million. When you're in the trouble the MTA is, every penny, and, you know, they've got that. They've got the labor thing overhanging, as we talked about earlier.
How about the city's budget? Is it worsening, stabilized, looking like you predict?
We have to put out a executive budget the end of this month, so we've got another week or thereabouts. And we will today's, what, the 24th, so we have a week left to go. And it's not better than it was. There's still some things up in the air. For example, if the Shelley Silver's plan to put tolls on the bridges were to take place, part of that is they would take over the maintenance of the bridges, $100-200 million. And part of the Ravitch plan was that the MTA would take over paying for these extra bus lines. Remember those private bus lines the city took over? Since nobody mentions them, I can only assume that they're working reasonably well. But that's, altogether, that between subsidizing those, taking over those buses and the maintenance and bridges, it's $500 million a year. So, you know, that's another, does that come out of our budget or does it help our budget? There are a variety of things. We're still working with the labor unions get a Tier 5 pension. We really need Albany to come through with this. Our pension, and pensions are for current workers, health care are for current and retired workers, and it's about $10 billion a year that we're spending, which is roughly 25% of our income, and it will grow to
25%.
Right, just for that. And it will grow to, it's for 10, should be about 12 and a half in two or three or four years. It's a cost we just can't afford. And, you know, I understand the unions don't want to have a fifth tier because they say, you know, everybody that works together should get paid the same, although there are four tiers already. So everybody that's working together doesn't get paid the same now. And in fact, if you work there for a longer period of time, typically there's seniority has something to do with your compensation. So this argument that I want everybody paid the same is ridiculous. It just doesn't happen now. Without the tier five, we just can't continue to have the size workforce we want. And that's not good for the city and not good for everything. I saw this in an article, and the zoo is cutting back.
Yeah, right. They can't keep the bats or something.
You know, everybody's got to understand. Right. We don't have enough money to do everything. We have to make choices. Which things do you want? We continue to bring crime down in the city. We continue to improve the schools. We continue to clean the streets and improve the parks. But you can't do everything. And you can't do it as fast as you want or as to the extent that you want. And, you know, people say, oh, my goodness, this would get cut back. Yes. Now, do you want to pay more taxes or do you want to have more services? Everybody always says, I want cut the services. Don't raise taxes. And then you say, okay, here's the services. Oh no, don't cut that. And in the end, they don't want to cut anything. And
well,
they say, well,
stalemate we have in Albany right now. I mean, you know, nobody wants to make any the hard decisions.
Yes.
That's exactly what
that's what you have to do. That's what government's about in tough times.
What's your assessment, real fast, of the banks? This is a completely different subject. The banks and the people you talk to, you know, the health of
some
the economy.
Health
of the economy.
It's somewhat better. Seems to have stopped going down. I don't think everything's going to turn around together. I don't think everything's stopped going down. But anecdotal evidence is that banks are making mortgages. You know, if you have a house and you want to refinance, you can get a mortgage at 4% today.
4%.
I mean, that's historically the greatest deal, you know, in modern memory. And there is mortgage money. What is not there is the big loans for the big projects yet. But that will come because that's the way banks make money, by making loans. And so they will eventually get there. I think when you get through the stress test stuff and some of the banks have reported better than expected earnings, although that just maybe the expectations are so low. but comparisons get to be easy when you're down. You know, if you go from 17 million cars a year to 9 million, it's a disaster. You go from 9.9 million and say, oh, it's 10% better. I understand that, but, you know, it's still pretty low.
Still not so good.
But expectations are a big part of the economy. If people are afraid of losing their job and not making a mortgage payment, they won't spend, even if their job is secure and they have enough money to pay their mortgages. And if they don't spend, then they create the reality that they're worried about. So we want a higher savings rate. We just don't need everybody to do it big time all at the same time. But my advice to you is, yes, pay down your credit cards and don't have as much debt. You should have been doing that all along.
But don't do it at the same time gambling does.
Right.
Do it at a different time. Mr. Mayor, we're going to get to the phones. We have, I think, one line open. 800-321-0710, 800-321-0710, if you've got a question for Michael Bloomberg. That is coming up next. We continue 5 before 9 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, pick up your headset right there, and we'll get to some telephone calls. We're going to start with Mike in Brooklyn. Michael, you've got the mayor. Go.
Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Not bad. I'm just calling. You keep talking about the numbers, using numbers to, you know, using data to solve problems. I have a problem with that because I think the numbers have shown over the years that when you talk about affordable housing and gun control, that the numbers don't agree with the solutions that you propose.
Nobody's in favor of gun control. We want to get guns out of the hands of criminals and kids. What numbers don't add up?
Well, but that's the thing. I don't think a criminal is never going to obey the law. That's why they're a criminal. So getting the guns out of their hands, I don't think, is going to solve the problem.
Well, if they don't have guns, they can't shoot our cops and shoot our kids and shoot you and me. There's no question when somebody gets arrested, we grab and they have a gun. You look and you see, and almost all of them, they don't have permits for their guns that they obtained illegally in against federal law, because most of them have criminal records. Then when somebody gets arrested, is a repeat issue here. And, you know, the numbers are clear. They come from, Mike, from 1% of the gun dealers. Those gun dealers typically are in three or four states, Virginia, South Carolina, Pennsylvania, a couple of others, to come to here. The guns that go into Mexico, where over 1,000 police officers have been killed, almost every single one of them is sold in Texas on the American side of the Texas-Mexican border and just sent right over there. So that, you know, the numbers are clear that bad guys shouldn't have guns, and when they do, they kill more people than if they don't. Now, nobody's in favor of gun control. The Second Amendment gives you the right to have guns, and I don't have a problem if you want to go hunting. But if you are a criminal with a criminal record, or underage, federal law is clear. You can't have a gun, and unfortunately, the government hasn't been helpful in us stopping them from getting guns, and there's some provisions like the gun show loophole where if you're a casual seller at a gun show, no background check required. If the government takes away your license to sell guns, if you're a dealer, you can go out in the street, John, you'll love this, and you can sell your guns without any background check. It's like saying to a drug dealer, you're going to jail, but wait a second, you can go out in the street and get rid of your crack supply to the kids. I mean, it's the most insane thing you've ever seen in your life. Anyways, Mike, the numbers, I think, do bear it out, and thank you.
All right, Susan in Brooklyn, quickly, what's your question for the mayor?
Regarding your program to pay poor New Yorkers cash for good behavior, you mentioned earlier that if private funding runs out, there might be a transition to public funding. Mayor Bloomberg, before tapped out, hardworking taxpayers pick up the tab for this program. Would you consider putting it to a vote on a proposition on Election Day?
Well, we don't. Here's the issue, Susan. Number one, I don't know if this program is going to work. If it does work and it saves us money, then we should, the city should be doing it. And if it doesn't work and doesn't save us money, we shouldn't be doing it. In any case, it is a very small program compared to most of the things that we do. And for all I know, the different things we do could easily wind up being state or federal money. Most of the social programs are not done with city taxpayer dollars. The city taxpayer dollars go to some of it, and certainly to supporting the people that provide the service. But our budget is roughly $60 billion, of which 20 of it is not city taxpayer dollars. And that's where these things come from. This is not a handout, Susan. This is a hand up if it works. And only if it works would we then have the city doing. We do a lot of things like this. You try to see if it works before we charge people, have taxpayers pay for it, rather than have taxpayers go and pay for things, and then we find out later on it was a waste, and those things are very hard to stop. Anyways, don't worry. We're worrying about your money as much as we possibly can. And if it's a good deal for you, we'll do it. And if it's not, don't worry. It ain't going to be done.
All right, Mr. Mayor. That's the theme behind our says it's time to go. Our time has run out. I will not see you next Friday. I'm going to take some time off, but I'll catch up with you in a couple of weeks.
I
suspect you'll still be in the job. We have no plans to go.
One can only hope.
Thank you, Michael Bloomberg. And thank you, everybody. That's going to do it for another week here on the John Gambling Show. We will gather up here together on Monday. Have yourself a wonderful and glorious weekend. And when you enjoy those record-breaking temperatures, just thank the mayor, as you heard. It's 9 o'clock.
You just heard John Gambling. New York's best news talk continues next with Glenn Beck.